So I'm Tom Talpe. I'm an architect in the file sharing team, and I own the documents that you're probably most interested in, SMB, SMB2, SIFS, Serve Service, all the documents on the top layer of FSA, as well as the general file sharing ecosystem that that Windows exports, and that's the subject of the 21 odd documents. The FSA document is the chief target of the Torque conversion work that we did, which was motivated by the sort of what wasn't described in the SMB layers. The SMB protocols, as you know, are something of a pass-through to the underlying object store. And so while our protocol documents described in great detail the behavior of the protocols, they didn't go to the complete level of describing what the Windows behavior was when you actually invoked some of these operations, right? And so FSA was our response to, I describe FSA as one big giant Windows behavior note, right? It's basically a detailed description of each operation that the object store exports to the protocols, to the file sharing protocols. And the behavior that FSA describes is then passed through by these upper layer protocols. So we've tried to very carefully and cleanly separate what's protocol behavior from what's object store behavior. And in fact, object store behavior varies among object stores, right? The FAT file system doesn't support symbolic links or whatever. There are differences in the object store, in the behavior of the protocol, depending on what object store it sits on top of. So as Neil may have mentioned, FSA focuses on NTFS, which is our premier object store exported from Windows. And so we've focused the SMB Torque conversion effort on that NTFS behavior, which we believe is the key behavior. There are slight differences for FAT and the like, but I think they'll be pretty obvious. So when did we start writing FSA? Probably in June of last year, about a year ago. And back last September, we had some discussions about that behavior, about that work, at the SMB Plugfest at SNEA, right? And I talked a little bit about it. Neil gave an early presentation on FSA. We continued to work on FSA through the end of the year, and it was published in March as part of the MSDN version of our protocol releases. The changes in the SMB, SMB2, and SIFS documents accompanied those. We finished them roughly, February and published them in March. So that being just a couple months ago, you may not have seen the latest version of these protocol documents. And really, to kind of motivate you to go look at them, I just want to show you a couple of examples from what we call Torque conversion. Okay, so I guess I want to stress that this Torque converter is not something you can drop on your foot, right? It's not a thing. It's not a document. It's not a single specific section of a document that you can look at. It's a set of references from the protocol documents that torque convert, if you will, to the differing gear ratios that FSA implements, right? And so if the engine of SMB is driving the transmission of FSA or NTFS, there's got to be something in the middle to distribute that torque. And so it's perhaps a somewhat colorful term that makes you think it's a thing. It's not a thing. It's just a set of rules that bring the protocol behavior down to the object store Windows behavior. And so there's a ton of examples. We could sort of spend all week doing it. But I think a good way of looking at it is to check the open routines from SMB2 and SIFS. And the simplicity of one is in contrast to the, basically complexity of the other. So let me just bring up SMB2 briefly. So this is the document itself. This is the reference to this is up in SMB2's open routine, receiving at the bottom of the screen here. Receiving an SMB2 create request. And so the protocol goes through a number of required operations in the protocol that are each specified, right? So we receive an SMB2 header with a command value equal to create. We first verify the session, then verify the tree connect, then verify the path name. And finally, we're, you know, getting ready to perform the create request on the path name. And so down here, it will flow down through a few more validations, check for a reparse point, check for flags, check for bits, if it's a symbolic link, if it's a reparse point, if it's a create context, oh, finally, we're opening the file, right? Or creating the file, as the case may be. And so it comes down to must attempt to open the named object in the underlying object store. Every place you see the term object store, you're going to think this is a Torque conversion insertion point. And the parameters of interest are these things that have been marshaled basically out of the request and out of the context of the session and the tree connect and all the various things that form the context of the operation. Finally, it comes down to map these flags to match the semantics of its implementation-specific object store. Okay? And so this is where, you know, insert your object store here, and Microsoft will then insert MSFSA. And so 193 will warp us back to our Windows behavior note, 193, in which we say Windows performs the following open create mappings from the SMB2 parameters to the object store as described in FSA 3.1.5.1, server requests an open of a file. So you can find that section in FSA, obviously. In SMB2, the mappings are very, very straightforward, as you can see. The desired access, file attributes, share access, create distribution, disposition, and options basically pass directly through. In other words, it's not an accident that SMB2 chose those bit flags, right? They are Windows implementation-specific things. So this pass-through is quite straightforward. There's a couple of interesting things that are maybe not obvious from the interface. But, for instance, the session security context and security flags for impersonation level are actually not passed to the object store. And you can find that in the document when you start looking at impersonation level, where you'll find that the SMB2 server validates that the impersonation level requested is correct from the protocol perspective, but then doesn't do anything, right? We actually say we do not implement impersonation in the SMB2 file path. So this is, if you will, proof of that. We don't pass it to the object store. The path name is relative to the tree connect. The root open is the share open instance that was obtained at SMB2 initialization, right? This is basically the root of the tree connect, the context that was stored up in the session in the tree connect. And is case sensitive is always false. SMB does not currently support case sensitivity in NTFS. This may change with the Unix extensions work. And the oplock key is specified only for obtaining leases, so it's actually passed as null during create. It's only managed during the lease management. And then after opening, FSA will presumably do something. There's a couple of fix-ups, if you will, that have to happen. A create action is returned, right? What was actually done? Was a new file created or was an existing file opened? And the open needs to result in a file ID back to the client. So this makes it clear that the file ID to map to open mapping is computed and maintained by the server. And there's a discussion in the abstract data model about how that's done. But basically, the actual open handle that comes back from FSA is not parroted back on the wire. We turn that into an abstract file ID. So you can see that it's a fairly straightforward mapping. We don't go to any great lengths in SMB2 to alter that behavior. But if you go over to another document, you'll find that a much more interesting thing occurs. MSSIFS. So we go up here to MSSIFS, and thank you, Chris. This is delete directory. Do I have the wrong one? I think I clicked the wrong one. Well, anyway, what I was trying to do was in the server processing rules, 3.3 is the server processing rules, receiving a SMBcom create request. Okay, and a similar bunch of things occur. A number of checks are performed, and a number of I'm not sure where I went back to. Let's just go back here. A very similar Windows behavior note can be found. Windows servers open files in the object store as described in FSA with the following mapping of input elements. It's not defined as a table here because there's actually more of them. But the root open is provided instead of from the, there's no root open in SMB2, right? Comes from the session tree connect. In this case, we use the tree ID to look it up in the tree connect table. We pass the file name, the security context, the desired access, etc. The protocol is much more complex, so there's quite a bit more input mapping to be done. Share access.
What you're doing there is mapping old DOS and OS2 attributes to the actual ones used by your team.
To our current FSA behavior. So in effect, we're reconstituting from all this grody old past to the way the API works today, for as described by FSA. So we come down here, file share read, create options, create disposition, desired file attributes, is case sensitive. Here we actually pass it through, right? Not that FSA does anything appropriate with it. You'd have to go read FSA to figure it out. And boom, I guess, Chris, you probably should have mentioned that we invoked the object store right here. The return status is copied into the status field. I think we just performed the operation here, right? But in any event, so quite a bit more setup work occurred before the operation was actually invoked in FSA. The return status is copied into the status field, so we, in effect, pass back the result of FSA directly. This is, once again, a window into the Windows implementation. Processing continues as successful, though. There is more work to be done after the operation in the SIFS case. So there's an op-lock to be managed, level to be established, access mode, file attributes need to be fetched. Once again, captured from FSA. The file size, more attributes, and a new FID is finally generated. Right. In SMB2, we jump straight to the FID behavior. We got. Yeah, make three of them as I count it.
Yeah.
Right? One for the op-lock flags, one for the file attributes, and one for the file size. Right? Because we had to return attributes to satisfy the SIFS version of the protocol. So basically, you can't always search for MSFSA, but you want to search for these object store invocations. Every place you see them, something interesting happened. We moved from protocol space to the Windows file system implementation and back. And so errors, for instance, where did we talk about the status of the return status. So for instance, to find out what possible errors Windows might return for a given operation, it's probably an FSA. If it was deemed by the protocol as a required behavior, you know, all wrong arguments, okay? So status invalid parameter had to come back. That's clearly handled completely within SMB, SMB2, and SIFS. But where it invokes the file system, go read the file system document to find out the specific Windows behavior. And it'll vary by file system and vary by the individual situation. So in other words, this is the torque converter. Text like this is, quote, the torque converter. And it's our attempt to make a useful, implementable specification for SMB2, SMB, and SIFS that matches the Windows behavior for NTFS. We'd love to see some feedback on whether we've succeeded. It's been 2 months, and we've handled some bugs on FSA, but I'd love to see some more.
Why I guess we're open to questions.
We made a request to perform a case-sensitive operation, which may or may not be satisfied
basically
by the implementation. Right.
So the question that we were just discussing here is, has NTFS been modified so it does support case?
NTFS has always supported case sensitivity. In fact, people don't realize this. NTFS, when it was originally developed, was only case-sensitive, and then there was a flag to override that to become case-insensitive. And so the default implementation was case sensitive. And that got tweaked. That sort of got reversed in Windows 2000. But NTFS does support case sensitive and insensitivity. A good example of a component that makes this quite visible is our NFS component. That when you install NFS, you can make a choice whether you want it to be case sensitive or insensitive, and NTFS works just fine. The thing people have to realize is it's globally changed on the volume. And so even though this implies, the way the APIs are laid out, you can say on a given open whether I want it to be case sensitive or insensitive, but in practice, generally it functions best when people are either using the whole volume case sensitive or the whole volume case insensitive. And it's because of these, what they actually did in Windows 2000 is they introduced a registry key to turn the system case sensitive or not case sensitive. Obviously, it defaults to case insensitive. And you can flip this key, reboot the machine, and then the whole machine just runs in case sensitive mode. It's a better, it's more compatible when you're dealing with it, because if you have an app in case insensitive mode and you see these files that are only different in case, it can confuse it in what it's trying to open. And that's why they made that change in Windows 2000. But it is fully supported and available today. FSA does cover how share modes work. If you go in and read the descriptions, I didn't give all the examples I could have. But if you go and look at open, it explicitly describes how the share modes are checked. How, for example, one of the interesting changes when we did the new granular oplocks is the order of the checks that we made. It used to be with the old oplock model that I'm trying to remember how to describe this. There was an order. Basically, if you had a batch oplock and someone had it open, someone tried to do, you would get a sharing violation with someone because this batch lockup was there. One of the things we did with Windows 7 when we added the new granular oplocks, which we call leasing in the SMB2 protocol doc, and it's only SMB2 that uses it. But we do the checks different such that if you have what we call a read-write handle oplock, we'll break that first before the sharing checks, or a read handle oplock, so that we get fewer sharing violations. And that whole algorithm is described in the whole open section of FSA. The answer is they don't, because you open each stream independently and they have their own share modes. And again, that should be specified. Yes? The vol snap, you mean? That is not described in FSA. None of the vol snap related operations are described. Because it's below the file system is the reason why. The SMB documents talk about it, don't they?
Enumeration of previous versions of the file is covered. That little timestamp thing, that's covered. But not the underlying volume level behavior that might implement it. You can open a file.
Yes, you can open a file.
Right, but you can't open a volume with SMB.
Yeah. That is something I should have pointed out. Anything that is volume-centric is not exposed through the FSA document because there are no volumes through the protocols. And so all the volume-centric operations are not there, which is why none of the VolSnap shadow copy functionality, previous versions, whatever it's called, are not exposed in there. And anything that is visible through SMB protocol is described by the SMB protocol.
That's how we tried. We start with the protocol, the wire visible interoperability required pieces. And FSA then describes what backs those operations.
Correct.
It's not the other way around.
Back here.
Pass-through data structures are mostly in FSCC, which is the file system control codes. Those, the handling of these things are all down in here, right? So you'll find, if you look in SMB, SMB doesn't describe them. It describes them as pass-through, right? And then it describes that it will pass the pass-through to FSA. If you go here, you will then find the name of that operation, the pointer to the FSCC description
go to,
of...
Go to open and just show them what it looks like.
Like here?
Yeah. So you'll see, for example, it references MSFSCC for the descriptions. Open probably wasn't a good choice. If you went to like the file information classes, it has a reference to the structure that's being returned there. We don't duplicate that information because our goal is not to duplicate anything.
Yeah, like...
Okay. Which one? Did you have a specific one you're wondering about?
Okay. That's just quota. But.
Yeah, see, it says this output buffer is a file quota information structure, and you get the information on it right there. And it links over to FSCC for every structure it references.
Because those FSCC are implicitly, you know, carried by SMB, SIFS, SMB2. So those are wire operations.
Right.
Then these are the actual handling.
And it turns out that then they just come pass straight through to us, and then we do the manipulation on them. And you can see how they're manipulated, and we reference the parameters out of the structures sort of in a generic way, but we explicitly reference them. Okay.
There is a long list of operations in here, and some of them are very trivial. Some of them aren't handled. They're exposed on the wire, but then not implemented.
Correct.
Others are explicitly.
About 110 operations. Yes?
You mentioned that volume operations aren't exposed, but one of the things I have to run into a lot right now is how to make sure unique IDs are unique. So when you return an ID for a file, mm-hmm. I have to hash it uniquely. So I need to know a unique volume ID, volume UID perhaps, so I can tell that. That is an example where something I'd like on the volume. Like I'd like to be able to know that this volume here is likely to be different than this volume over here. Or in the case of DFS, there may be mappings where it's the same volume.
See, what you're saying is, how can I... The question I think you're asking is, how can I tell two shares are to the same physical volume underneath? Is that what you're asking?
That can happen in the DFS case. And also,
yes, it can.
So one of the things that's critical is that my unique IDs are unique. Mm-hmm. But... in the SMB world, you can have these weird mappings of volumes, and you can have junctions that are pointing to different things. And it's very possible that you could have hard-linked files that are in two separate namespaces.
Yes.
So I need a combination of the unique ID, which I think I can trust is unique across, let's say, a share, and some volume UUID that is reasonably unique.
That is an interesting problem, which I mean... From an FSA point of view, we don't really deal with that because
there is,
and we have. If you go to the can you just go to the abstract data model?
This is the common.
Can you
one,
open right? that one up?
Oh, like this?
So we describe a volume structure and what we track at a volume level. And in fact, it talks about
that there's IDs, there's object IDs, and it does cover file IDs and things like that. The problem I see, what you're asking though, is more of a protocol thing. Is how do you correlate a volume? How do you know the underlying volume for a given share? And there's like a volume ID. But that's more of a protocol issue. It is an interesting question. I agree.
POSIX requires setup, intercept, status pass, right? One of the fields that is volume ID.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't know that the protocol actually returns an underlying volume ID that the share is on, does it?
Yeah. I think you're asking a question about SMB2 and how it generates these file IDs.
Correct.
And so there is an algorithm described there, and I will foolishly just try to see if I can open it, find it.
I need both file ID and I also need a POSIX to return a volume ID. So I assume that there's got to be some SMB2 operation. I've missed some FSCC level for this.
FSCC level?
FSCC defines the info levels that are imported over SMB2.
Right.
It would be pulling something like that volume ID or show me out of the backing store.
You know, one you should take a look at is, there is in FSCC operations around retrieving object IDs, and they return a volume ID. And maybe you should take a look at that. And that is documented both in FSA and FSCC. I don't remember if it's an information class or an FSCTL. We can look up after. So take a look at that, because it does actually return volume IDs. And maybe you could just query it and get that information back.
And maybe query it once.
Exactly.
I think I just have to trust you guys that your unique IDs really are unique.
at the volume level or at the file level?
At the share level. So anything under a share, when I query a file, reader can give me, folders can give me a unique ID for each file and reader.
Yeah. NTFS guarantees that. The other file systems, the guarantee is a little less strong. And the biggest issue around them is that they can change. For example, on FAT and the XFAT, a file ID can change, and it's changed by rename. So a rename will change its file ID. It'll still be unique, but it'll change.
That's from my perspective, because that's just like deleting it.
Yeah. NTFS guarantees they don't change, and they are unique. And it's the only one that does that.
I think you should probably talk to David when he's here later today. I think he would be able to give you the most accurate response to this question.
Yeah. Any other questions? Yes.
They were released back in March. It's like I say, it's just in line in the document. You have to open the document and look for it. It was a March 19th. March 12th,
search for
like that.
You said search for object store. Right?
Yeah, just look, search for MS-FSA. If it appears in the informative references of the document, it's been TORC converted.
Yeah, if you go out to MSDN, the latest ones are out there, if you go search for them. I was looking for them yesterday, so.
They are definitely there.
They are definitely there. Okay, we've got it open right here. You can come up and take a look. Any other questions? If not, thank you very much, and feel free to come up and talk to us if you have anything specific you want to ask. Thank you.
Thank you, Neil and Tom. And the file system seems going to be available during the one-on-one this afternoon on one track, and that'll be a quick start here. Online is going to be representing the technical.
Yeah, the Leech-Naik draft, which everybody refers to as bracket SIFS bracket, was the old internet draft published in 1997 by Paul Leech and Dilip Naik. And then, so that was an IETF document that sort of stopped in 1998, frozen in time, right? But it was the only normative-ish SIFS document. So, you know, with Chris Hertel's and Ubix's invaluable help, over the past year or two, we've created MS-SIFS. That was published back in last September and has been updated several times. The last major one was this torque conversion and ADM effort that was published in March. The ADM effort is basically bringing it in conformance with our template, the legal template that we're required to use for our documents. So anyway, MS-SIFS is a fully normative description of the SIFS protocol up to and including NT 4.0. And therefore, the content previously in MS-SMB became pretty much 50% redundant, right? Because SMB describes the same protocol from Windows 2000 on. So wherever it was the same, wherever it made a reference to SIFS or wherever it covered something that was already covered in MS-SIFS, we simply removed it from SMB and replaced it with a pointer to MS-SIFS. As a result, about 50% of the document, maybe a little more, disappeared from MS-SMB. And if you look at the document, you know, we can scroll down to it if you want, but basically it vanished from MS-SMB because it's present in SIFS, in the underlying document. Okay, so SIFS goes to NT4, right? And then from Windows 2000 forward, that's SMB, what we call SMB. And these documents are now called MS-SIFS, the Common Internet File System. And if you go a little ways down, FSA is actually not here in the protocol programs, but it is in MSDN. I'll find it for you in a sec. Right? FSA is an informative-only document, so it's not part of the program. And then SMB and SMB2 live down here in the, you know. And if you open one of these, SMB, I think, will find is the most recent release was April 23rd. So this is the one to look for. This is the one that first has torque conversion. Okay? But it is updated, you know. There's a constant stream of these updates. They go in every 1, 2, 3 months, depending on what's queued. And you'll see these things come out pretty frequently. So anyway, that can be opened from this link. Right here, just to show, this is regular old MSDN. And we'll just see that the date is, in fact, actually released Monday, May 3rd. The published date said April 23rd, but there's like a week or two in the pipeline to get it to MSDN. So typically these dates move around a little bit. But in any event, you'll find that actually if you go to the very bottom of the file, the most useful thing is usually down here in the change logs. And you'll find this is a release by release. This isn't cumulative. This will only go back to the previous public release, but you'll see tons of stuff in here that will list all the changes present in each version of the document. So that's what's to look for. And I can probably find FSA for you. It's in a slightly different part of the protocols. They are under the
you can just search on MSDN.
That's a good idea.
Just search for MSFSA. It's under informative reference.
Yeah, it's in the informative section. Here we are.
There you go.
with just a couple of revisions, editorial only in the most recent one, and there's FSA. Monday, May 3rd is its release date, even though it said April 23rd. So, check it out.